Thank you. All lines are now bridged.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the task force of the Conditions and Maintenance Certification Group. We will get started the brief roll call, and then we'll jump right into it. Denise Webb?
Present.
Raj Ratwani?
Here.
Ken Kawamoto, still on vacation. Sasha, do we have Sasha yet? Okay. Les Leonard? And John Travis?
Here.
Perfect. Okay. I will turn it over to Kate for another quick review of the charge, and then we'll proceed.
Sure. Thanks, Lauren. So the overarching charge of the Conditions Certification Task Force is to provide recommendations on the application programming interfaces, the real-world testing, and the attestations, conditions, and maintenance of certification requirements, the updates to the 2015 edition certification criteria, modifications to the ONC Health IT certification program, and deregulatory actions.
Thanks, Kate. So did you want to, should we start with the Google Doc and reviewing the recommendations there?
That's fine with me. Denise or Raj, does that sound okay?
Yeah, I think so. Let's start working through all the recommended changes.
Okay. Katie, you can go ahead and move the
Raj,
Google Docs over.
Do you want to cover the parts that where you led the meeting, and I'll cover the parts where I was leading the meetings, or how do you want to do this?
Yeah, that sounds like a great plan.
Okay. So I think the – go ahead, Kate, for the introductory part.
Sure. This is we may not necessarily – we're going to have to go over the charge, or you're going to have to go over the charge at the full HITECH meeting next week. So I just added it in here. But what we'll do is I can put this on, like, a PowerPoint so you'll have slides. But this is basically just the charge and the detailed charge that we've been going over every meeting.
Okay.
Okay, so two here starts with the recommendations. And I pulled out the overarching recommendation that I had heard about maintaining the 2015 edition. So.
Yeah, and I added a comment on our some text on this if everybody's okay with it. If you want to scroll down a little bit. We had quite a bit of discussion about the implications on records retention as well, with them not, with this not being a new addition. It sort of has this addition hanging out there in perpetuity if they keep it out, if ONC decides to keep it and continue to modify it. So I added something about the records just to say that that was another reason that it didn't make sense.
So are there version control issues? I know there's some emailing back and forth on this. And
No, that was my mistake. What happened was I had clicked on the link that Kate sent, and I was in the latest version. But then when I started putting in comments, it started putting the name of the person who owned the computer. And I didn't realize that they were logged into Google, and I didn't know that. So then I backed out of it and rejected what I had put in. And then I logged her out, and I logged in. But for some reason when I logged in, because I've never used Google Docs, it showed me documents that were already being worked on or had been opened. So I must have grabbed one that Kate sent earlier that I had opened on my iPad and didn't realize it. So I started modifying that one. So I don't think there's any versioning problems. I think yours should all be in here, Raj, because I modified the one latest that had your comments in it.
Okay, good. I was going to say, because I don't see the recommended changes or comments I made, but if you modified those, then that's good.
Oh, I would think, I don't think you had anything up here. I think your first one was down below.
I think it was.
Okay,
there.
Yeah.
Is that? Okay.
Yeah, there's one in blue. That's Raj's. There's Raj's. Yeah, yours are in here.
Great.
Yeah, that's how I knew I had a problem, because I remembered when I first opened it, you had comments in there, and then they weren't there anymore, and I'm like, what is going on here? So anyway, Google let me just keep going, and then when I went to save it, I had to save it with a new name, so obviously it didn't let me affect what we were working on, so that's good. Okay, any comments on what I added for the group? I mean, is everybody okay with what I put in there related to the records issue?
It seems fine to me.
Yep, I agree.
Okay.
This is at the top of page 2, is that right?
Yeah, we're on recommendation number, that was recommendation number 1. And now Raj is going to walk us through the recommendations related to real-world testing, starting with recommendation number
2,
our preamble that we...
Yep. So everyone can see the preamble piece, but recommendation 2 was around the timelines thing. I think this was the important point that Sasha first brought up. That everybody agreed with. Any changes to that one? Okay.
No.
Okay, recommendation 3. This was asking really for clarification around the care settings venue that's loosely described in the document.
Go ahead.
No, I was just to say, maybe rather than saying guardrails, and I see Sasha's kind of highlighted that, maybe she'll address this. I think our real need is really understanding the meaning or the level of detail is probably the wrong word. We're really after a clarity as to the meaning of care settings and venues that the test plan must cover when it comes to the vendor choice or the vendor discretion. It's an inadequate.
It's really about sufficiency, right? Sufficiency and applicability.
Right.
So
yeah, I would think we thought the put guardrails were piece.
What did you say, Sasha?
I agree with John. I would say we should just cut the or put guardrails piece.
Yeah.
I don't think that's
I think
clear.
That sentence stands. We're after clarity. And maybe if it's important, clarity and par level meaning. And by that I really mean I don't think it's ONC's intent that one vendor goes and picks medical subspecialties and another vendor picks ambulatory.
Well, can we put some, I thought we should have some elaboration on this that reflects our discussion. I think there needs to be some clarity around the minimum expectations in terms of choosing applicable care settings and sufficiency. What's sufficient?
Yeah.
In a test plan. So,
and I like the way you said it. I mean, honestly, if a vendor were to want to do beyond minimum, that's their discretion.
Right.
I mean, who needs to stop them? But there needs to be a par-level understanding of minimum.
Do we want to say in regards to applicable care settings and venue for the particular health IT product?
Yeah, that's probably fair because that could vary. You may have very little differentiation if you're trying to test public health reporting, or you're only presenting for the sake of hospital quality measures versus somebody who's presenting a broad waterfront that covers all the interoperability criteria. And so that's fair.
So I also think part of the minimum expectations is not just which settings, but what is sufficient, the number of settings.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think there also needs to be clarity on what is considered a sufficient number. Right now, it's the field's wide open.
Yeah, and it just shouldn't be, yeah.
Okay, that's good. I think that's good, Sasha, what you put in here. You want to close it out? Yeah, close it out with your parentheses and period. And then, yeah, to the extent we can finalize these, then Kate can just cut and paste them.
So to me, there seems to be some amount of overlap in recommendations 3, 4, and 5, I think.
I think 4 is much broader. It's about an overall template, not just the venue.
Yeah, and so I think that, you know, I guess we can walk through these and then make some decisions.
Yeah, I took 4 as being, you know, it's broad, but it's focused on the test plan and all of its characteristics, you know, and maybe 4 and 5 have more. Granted, scope is going to be part of a test plan, so what we cover in 3, and outcomes, what we cover in 5, is going to be part of a test plan. But this really is on the plan itself.
With 4, I was picturing like the standards that we use for NIST for usability testing in terms of the format of the report.
Yeah, I agree. Uh-huh. Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. And then I was also thinking that, you know, there's other NIST documents. There's the template, whatever number of NIST document that is. And then there's also the NIST documents that do provide a little bit more guidance on types of settings and venues you should be thinking of and so forth.
3 and 4 might be accomplished by the same document, which would be fine, I think. But I would feel that they're worth making as separate recommendations.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. They answer it with 1, that's great, but yeah.
Okay, great.
And then 5 was a slightly different recommendation just because they said that the 3 characteristics of successful real-world testing included some things that weren't applicable to all of the criteria proposed for real-world testing. So I think that that might be clarified in a variety of ways, but it is a little bit different.
Yeah. Okay, so is everyone comfortable with that set?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. Let's jump to the next section. So 2.2.1.3 is focused on scenario and use case focused testing. Recommendations.
I added a few comments in there to suggest, a few pieces of text.
Wasn't there another word, too, besides scenario and use case? I feel like it was workflow or something.
I think you're right, Sasha. I remember that as well. Workflow was the word that was used.
Would we want to add that in, too?
I think it makes sense to, yeah.
You could
yeah.
add a sentence after the sentence in 6. Also, ONC should also clarify the term workflow as it's used in the real-world testing.
Yeah. All right. Are we good to move on to 7?
Any problem with the changes? I changed the text to take away every place in here where we ask questions. I tried to avoid asking questions and put it more in a clarify whether something is true or not, and or discuss it in the text. So that's all I changed on the next one. Those were all worded as questions, and I changed it to statements.
I think we actually were, the nature of our conversation was to say that there were advantages to things like automated testing, regression approaches, and so forth. So is it really simply a question, or are we recommending that those be also considered?
Sorry, Sasha, are you on 7 now, or?
Yeah. No, 6. She's on the second part where I modified it, and I obviously left the verb out there. I deleted it and then didn't type it back in. What clarify whether automated testing can be used, and what Sasha's suggesting is, rather than clarify it, are we recommending that they affirmatively allow it? Is that what you were looking for, John, in this?
Yeah, I would say so, and I guess the cursor's kind of resting over the word regression there. I was trying to, well, I'm getting a weird chat. Thank you. I think that ties in both. That makes a suggestion, although that's kind of a run-on sentence there. Clarify whether automated testing can be used.
Should say can be. Can is missing.
Yeah. Yeah. And whether regression approaches can be automated. I like the idea of saying, instead of making it a question, say we recommend automated testing be able to be, you know, be used, and that an automated approach could be applied to regression or something like that. Yeah, I like the idea of making a statement that asserts it, because there's no reason why not. And that may open up some opportunity to classify. When we were talking, I think we got into, if nothing changes, you know, is that really the same burden as if you're introducing something new? Any good testing methodology is going to recognize regression.
Okay, I think this needs to be rewritten. If you just try to modify the way it was, it's going to be a mess.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah, it was just a bunch of questions before, and I think in our recommendations we want to avoid having questions. That's not really serving the purpose of what we're supposed to be doing.
No. True.
Should I accept these edits to try to just clean up this so we can look at it legibly? Or does Kate want to do that?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can go ahead and do it, Sasha, or I can. Either way.
Okay.
We could say here we recommend permissible testing approaches include automated testing, regression testing. And then does the last part fit into this?
Perhaps not. I think that was part of the question. I don't know that it necessarily...
Okay, so we could
maybe we
out.
Want to work the end of it to say we recommend vendors be given discretion to incorporate permissible testing approaches, including.
Okay.
Yeah, that'd be good.
And then you'd really have just two kinds there. You could just put an and between the two and delete the rest.
Should we say that those are examples?
Yeah.
Including, for example. Yeah, I would say including, for example, automated testing and regression testing.
Because we're not trying to be exclusive to those. We're just saying there should be discretion, and these are other testing methods we discussed that would be potentially viable, but someone might come up with other testing methods that might meet those same characteristics.
Okay. So would this be a distinct recommendation from six? I mean, later Kate can renumber these, but do you want this to be a recommendation, or is it part of six?
I think it could be separate. I don't know. What do you think?
Six is strictly definitional. That's the word. Seven is actually an active recommendation for a substance. I think that they should be distinct because six, you want those definitions anyway.
Mm-hmm. Why don't we just put the word recommendation and then a number sign, and then she can just get these renumbered later. Yeah, because this might not be the only situation.
Oh, gosh, I'm not good at numbering here, or at spelling.
So are we on seven?
Yeah.
Okay, so seven, I modified a little bit. I think we had human cognition, human elements, but I think for me I was unclear as to whether we're saying that and what the task force feels about, are we saying that we should be testing the use of the information as well or just the exchange of information?
Well, the regulation requires use, includes use.
It does say use, and the question is, to what extent do we believe use should be tested?
Well, and there's also maybe a question, because back to recommendation five, not all of the criteria would have users in the same way.
Yep.
So, like, if I think of some of the criteria that are about making APIs available, the system that would be doing the real-world testing would not necessarily be the user of the data. So I don't know how you would have, like, use-based testing of that criterion. You could do technical testing of it.
Yeah, I agree, Sasha. I mean, I think I would be in favor of saying use of data when there's actually an end user should be tested, because I think that's a central part of real-world testing and interoperability. So I think it makes sense to say that, but I think we'd have to have the caveat that that's only when there's actually an end user in the equation.
Well, and end users of the product being tested.
Yes.
So do you want to say when there are end users of the product being tested, or where there are?
When there are no end users of the product being tested, use-based testing would not be pertinent.
And they seem specific on the receipt, not so worried about the capture. In terms of the use.
Right. I think the use is really about, I mean, the place where use is incorporated is in part three of successful real-world testing, which is receipt and use of electronic health information in the certified EHR. And so it doesn't seem to me that testing data capture, which is part of other criteria, like the other usability testing criterion, the usability testing of it, is pertinent here because the use scenario is focused specifically on the receipt of data. Which is part of why we
make the comment about the providers, because
right.
they weren't considered in the cost estimates and the impact estimates.
Maybe that statement would clarify the following part of this, which is that providers would need to be involved and they were not considered in the cost estimates.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the other piece that comes up here is if we're saying that when there's an end user, the use of data needs to be examined, then that introduces a whole host of other measures. And this is also the area where I think they were pretty ambiguous on the measures and saying at least one measure, if I remember the language right.
Right.
Yeah, they didn't get into specifying the nature of the measure.
And we have another recommendation, I think, related to measures. We could add that there.
I certainly think if we're saying that we want some kind of we're looking at user efficiency and effectiveness of using the received data, there's we could mirror the measures that are used in safety enhanced design in some way.
Do we want to recommend that here, Raj? And tie it all together?
Yeah, I would be comfortable saying that standard usability measures like those in safety enhanced design should be used, or something to that effect, articulated better than that. But I think it makes sense to say that there are standard measures here to be used.
Yeah, one thought there. I like that idea because it does introduce another thought whether or not at least one manner or type of measure could be a real-world application of the same measures used in SED testing.
Exactly.
Yeah. There's nothing to prevent that.
So the measures used in SED testing would not be able to be gathered in actual use of the product, right? Because some of the way the data would need to be captured. I'm just trying to think this through. I hadn't really thought about this element before.
Yeah, so I think it gets back to this issue that you brought up earlier, Sasha, around is this testing being conducted on the production system, which I think we all think is probably not really smart to do, or a test system that closely mirrors the production system. And if it's the latter, then you could certainly capture some measures of time on task and successful completion of the task and so forth. If it's on the production system, I think that raises some issues.
Yeah. And I think all of these come back to some of these other points too, right? So one of the goals is to test like compliance with code sets, for example. And I think you could have an automated way to do that at a very large scale. And so if I'm answering the question about like how many sites are appropriate for this type of testing, and I'm envisioning what if I did an automated test to assess the use of code sets. That's a very different type of test than if I consider we need to recruit provider test participants to do a simulation-based test, not their actual use of the product, to be measured in kind of a lab setting where you could look at time on task and so forth. Because then the number of sites that could be incorporated into the testing is obviously, by the nature of that testing, very different.
Yeah, totally agree. And the cost is substantially higher for the
absolutely, absolutely.
Type. Yeah.
And so I think to some extent, either of these directions could work. We've proven with the SED testing that type of testing could be there. We know from other types of testing we do as HIT developers that other types of testing are also possible. I guess the question is here, I don't want us to end up with an inconsistent proposal
Yeah.
If the number of settings makes one assumption and the cost estimate makes another assumption, and then the nature of the testing in terms of looking at the use and the SED metrics makes a different assumption, then we'll really be in a pickle.
Well, tying into what we were talking about earlier, that not every criteria that fits within this requirement is necessarily going to require the same manner of testing. For example, public health one-way submission isn't really going to test use. One of two things, and maybe both. One is to say that obviously the measurement is, I'm trying to remember, do they bring the measurement down to be criteria level, or is it broadly one measure? I could look at the language, but.
I think it's broadly one measure.
It's broadly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, what I was going to say is use and interoperability, if you accept those as the two main things to be tested, I would think the real point there is, I almost hate to open my mouth on this, but do we suggest the minimum to be a measure of interoperability and a measure of use, because they're very different, or that where it involves, the testing involves both, you do one measure of both. I'm just trying to reconcile what we've been talking about, different manners of measurement that really, they're not at odds, they're just different.
Yeah.
And I don't know how burdensome it would be to say, if you're going to do one general measure of something, to say, do one general measure that focuses on use, where ingestion or incorporation is part of what you do, and it's more towards what Raj was suggesting, and that there's one measure of interoperability that's tied to conformance compliance, or, you know, use compliance. I'm sorry, more like if you want to measure it based on production volume, or you want to measure it based on conformance level of adherence towards interoperability.
So I think if we're going to suggest that, we wouldn't put it in this recommendation. We'd put it down in the recommendation around measures.
Okay, that's fine.
More than one, a minimum of more than one measure, if there's, you have to measure use and interoperability.
Let me
just say too, we need to really watch our time. We have over 30 recommendations to go through, and we wrap up at 3:45. So we do need to watch our time.
Okay. We in the proposed rule needs to better articulate the kind of difference between testing exchange versus testing use, given that not every exchange is going to require testing of use, given that there aren't end users. And then that's going to different measures, and some that are well-defined versus some that are kind of open, and the vendor gets to select what they believe is the appropriate measure.
So we're moving on to 8.
Yeah, I have some typos in 8. I just noticed. Sorry. I had to re-enter my changes. I was just trying to clarify this because I thought the way it was worded, it was confusing. And I wanted to make sure people understood what we were trying to say, and hopefully I captured what we were trying to say. There's an additional with in there, Sasha, on the third line. It says with, and
right.
An additional.
Just two, four examples.
Yeah. Yeah, I was cutting and pasting from the other document that I inadvertently edited. That was the wrong document.
So for the last four example, I don't think it's reasonable to provide both endpoints in some of the bidirectional testing scenarios. Some health IT developers will not have the mechanism for doing that, at least not in a real world setting sort of way. If the idea is the developer has to build a test harness to do it, I mean, I guess that's technically possible if that's the goal of this. But if the goal is really like have a, you know, a public health registry to test the interoperability with, just not practical.
Well, this is, I thought we were just talking here with bidirectional. If you go from one EHR product to another and you have a query response scenario.
I think we would need to clarify that though, because like immunization registry reporting is also bidirectional by definition, but you couldn't test it without a registry or a test harness. You could test one EHR connecting to another environment of the same EHR to see if it went the back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
That's common. And if that's what you were intending with this, I think that would certainly be an option for some types of testing, but not all of the criteria. Some of them are based on API usage. Some of them are based on public health uses. And they could be bidirectional, but they aren't necessarily going
well,
to
be. I actually was just trying to clarify this because I didn't understand what was being asked for or what example was being illustrated here in the original text. I think this is John's language. I find this confusing. What are we really trying to recommend here?
I think what we were getting after there, and maybe we seem to have kind of conjoined two points. One is the expectation for the involvement of providers. Is that a hard requirement? And that's kind of the first sentence. And maybe the second. But then we move on to really getting at the role of external parties or third parties that may be necessary to carry out bidirectional testing. They're two separate points. So
maybe if we say in the first sentence, ONC should clarify the expected involvement of providers and third parties to support the real
world. Yeah, then the rest of the paragraph flows. Yeah.
Right, because then we have one sentence saying providers should be involved, but then they need guidance on that. And then they should also clarify how endpoints should work. The provider cost impact should be addressed. I also think perhaps there should be provisions for if you are expected to recruit a public health agency into doing this testing with you, you make reasonable efforts to do so and can't, then what?
Oh, I think we addressed that in another comment. We actually
okay.
say that they could be held harmless.
Okay,
if they
that's
can't
great.
Get the
we'll
third parties.
That.
Yeah.
That sounds like we got that one. Okay, 9.
Scroll up.
All right.
There you go.
I think
this one was one I had brought up. I think it's worded for what I was after for the opening statement, and then we're just bolting the things that should fit within that.
And down below,
guidance.
I just took the things that were questioned.
Yeah. I don't have any issue with it, I don't think. I'm reading through it.
I added a little bit, John, on production experience. For what already
I'm reading that right.
Evidence and history of operating in real world production environment.
Yep. I like that. The fourth bullet kind of sticks out a little bit. because it's not, but it's a latitude of testing. I'm fine with it. It just has a little bit different aim about unchanged capability or, you know, giving credit to other experiences. But it's a point that needs to be made.
Yeah, I think it's important.
Yeah, it's fine. It's a good recommendation.
So here's our measurement recommendation. Is this the place where we want to suggest that where there is testing of real-world use, that there be a minimum of two measurement points?
Yeah, I think what we were saying is where the real-world testing is of both interoperability, and you could say conformance if you want, but that may be too limited, just interoperability and use of received
data.
I was about to say EHI, but that's not exactly the term used here. Then there should be a corresponding measure for each.
Is that the recommendation?
Or that, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
Although, if we're saying that the measuring use is analogous to measuring usability and safety-enhanced design, would we just want to replicate those same measures, which are measures of efficiency, effectiveness, and satisfaction?
That might be that might be a suggestion of a way that could be done. I don't know if we'd want to limit it to that. I like that, Raj, what we talked earlier.
Should
we point that out as a particular example?
One question, I guess, just because I've only been thinking about that for the last 5 minutes or so. What if we suggested that be a consideration after the pilot year? Because we recommended that they provide a template after the pilot year with recommendations. And I think it could be reasonable to say, let's adopt the SED measurements for use. But I don't want to, I guess, based on 5 minutes of consideration here, lock in something when there might be other approaches that would also be valuable.
Yeah, that's a fair point. So, Sasha, you're saying keep it as one metric of use for the pilot year, and then that could be refined?
Yes. So after the pilot year, consider updating metric expectations.
Yeah, I think that's a great point.
Oh, there you go. That's good.
Okay, did I get it?
Yeah, I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, on to 11.
So, John, you had brought this point out, I think Sasha did too, about the fact that if there's that little nuance, if ONC adopts a standard in the standards advancement process, but it does not yet have testing tools available. And the current regulation allowed attestation by the IP developer. You were concerned about that. Like, well, then how do you really judge or determine conformance? So I did reword this a little bit to be a bit clearer about that.
Yeah, I think you worded it pretty good.
I'm comfortable with it.
Okay. If you want to, do you want to?
No, I think you worded it. That's really good wording.
Okay. Oh, and here's 12 is the one that you mentioned to me earlier.
Yeah. And I think these had questions and I flipped them around.
I think that makes sense.
Does that capture it?
It does to me.
Let me give it a read here. Yeah, that's fine.
Raj, you good with it?
Works for me.
Okay.
Denise, I answered your question on 13. Is that helpful?
Yes, thank you, because I wasn't sure. There's so many time estimates to complete development and so forth. I think we just need to be kind of crystal clear. Okay. And I would assume that's if they're going to accept these suggestions, that they would have to go back in and revise those estimates.
Yes, I mean, we suggested above, for example, accounting for the provider time, but then also depending on the settings expected to be tested, I could see that the times estimated could be far too low if they expect a large variety of settings to be tested, for example.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe we should say to ensure they are accurate and align with the clarified understanding of the proposal. And when you say the proposal for real world testing, you mean, right?
Yeah.
And align to rather than aligned. Align to.
Doesn't it say to?
Take your ED out.
It does.
They are accurate and aligned to. Yeah, there you go.
Oh, yeah. Since they haven't done it yet.
And then I'd add your word testing, the real world testing proposal.
I'm losing my mind. Thank you.
All right, there you go. Got it. Thanks. I changed this because they actually require a semi-annual middle of the year and the end of the year. For attestations.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm fine with 14.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I did add that last sentence. I think I added that too. Yeah. That keeps it away from hot, when you pick like the last Friday of the month twice a year, it keeps it away
right.
from any holidays and that kind of thing. Okay.
Does this call need public comment or no?
Yeah, we'll have it about 15 minutes.
Okay. Let's keep cruising. On this one, I didn't think we were crystal clear about where we were really having the issue, and I remember from our conversation it was the relationship between the API technology supplier and the API user was never really discussed in the rule or the preamble at all.
Yeah, and it seemed like they were, and maybe it was my reading of it, but I think it was in evidence, and certainly by some other things stated about who they assume fees can be between. It almost seems like there was and maybe they just regarded it as out of scope, which is why the need for clarification. They weren't barring it. They were mum on it. But they seem to not really consider that there will be relationships between API users and API technology suppliers for the purpose of bringing applications to market that don't involve a provider, at least not initially. And therefore may not involve an API data provider. So, you know, the fact that there could be collaboration between an API user as an app developer and an API technology vendor isn't given much regard. Now, whether that is intentional or it's just simply they don't speak to it and it's permitted, given that it's mom, I think it would help to make that clear one way or another. We're not asking them to necessarily go regulate further an area that they may not need to, but they need to make it clear about whether or not the regulation speaks to it, because people could make the wrong assumption about that.
Right. And maybe it's just an oversight, and this recommendation will help them think about that. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. The next one is recommendation 16, and I had a comment attached to this. We didn't really elaborate here, and maybe, Sasha, since you're typing, we could add just something brief on recommendation 16 on our major theme about why we're recommending option 4.
Okay. So we said it was the first normative version of FHIR.
Yep.
It supported enhanced capabilities over the other versions.
Yeah, and I know we were concerned about bulk data, patient data requests. So handling bulk patients versus
right.
the leaving it wide open or a free-for-all for handling that other APIs in terms of population versus individual patients. So that's good. Yeah, I just thought we should, so when Raj and I present this, we can kind of give some elaboration as to why we're recommending this.
Okay.
And I just added some clarification on the next one, just to say, you know, why this would be good.
That makes sense.
Okay. All right, recommendation 18. Whoops. And I just took the questions and just said to please clarify who plays the role and how the determination is to be made on who plays what role.
So this was specifically about providing tokens to apps that can't be trusted to keep a secret?
Yeah.
Should we call that out? I don't know that we expect health IT developers to do it, or do you mean you expect the app developer to keep the token confidential? I think we were asking who is going to ensure that if a persistent token is required to be given to the API user, who ensures that the API user is creating a product that is capable of keeping the token properly secured?
Okay, we should probably say that, yeah, because this definitely was not clear. I don't think I type that this is something we expect the health IT developers to do?
I don't think I did.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that was my initial take on it. Sorry about that.
Okay. Oh, not a problem. Yeah, I think we didn't know who was expected to do this. Do you mean that API users are creating products?
Sure, they're creating apps, right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the API user embraces both individual users as users in the traditional sense and app developers.
Okay.
By its definition.
Okay. Add a comma after appropriately. Thank you. who it is and how the determination. Okay, that's good. That's good, Sasha.
Okay, 19.
All right.
Should we? Okay. I think this is also partially resolved by suggesting in Fire version 4 where there is a standard approach.
Yeah. We could reference it. And this just further reinforces our recommendation for option 4. That's good. We're going too fast, anyone. Please jump in. And then I reworded this a little bit.
20?
Oh, sorry. No. I did have a question on this one. Is this out of order? Because when I was looking in the preamble, update, I couldn't find this in the preamble. I looked before app registration, but it jumps from search, I think, to registration. Do you remember what page that was on?
No, but I remember that discussion, which was that the requirement is to update API documentation within 6 months. But I think I asked, what is it updated to show? Because the APIs themselves don't have to be updated to support the new requirements until 24 months. And so I didn't know.
Okay.
I just seemed weird to update the documentation prior to the actual APIs.
Right. So let's add the acronym API in front of documentation. And then I would put the CMCTF. That, I think that's the convention we're using, so to differentiate us from the other ones. Okay, great. All right, that clarifies it. I tried to find this, and I was like, okay, what is this? And Kate, if this is not in the right order, because it does help people just from a logical organization standpoint to sequence this in the order that it's found in the preamble.
Right. Yeah,
or
I'll go back and double check that.
Okay. All right. I know you're going to be renumbering these because we have one additional recommendation. Okay. Now on 21. Didn't really take anything out of here. I just changed the wording to just tell them what we want considered to be done.
Denise, do you mind if I accept all your wording changes and then read it just for clarity?
Absolutely. Yeah, I just took it out of the question mode.
I don't want to interfere with our change control, but sometimes we get so many comments in there that I find it difficult to actually parse what we're proposing. Okay. I think we want to say here who is. The way you had it was fine. Because they have to address the party responsible.
You could put what the practice of registration consists and does not consist of, and who the party responsible for keeping a list of registered apps is, and who is the party.
Okay.
Yep, that looks good. Yep.
Okay.
missing a space on describe the tasks on the next bullet.
I think what we're really saying here is quite clearly that
not liability.
Right, that there is not liability.
Or that the party is not liable, you could just say.
That.
Yeah, that the party is not liable.
I was just going to say we could give that just a little thought over the next 30 seconds or so while we break for public comment.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay. Operator, can you please open the line?
Sure. If you'd like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you'd like to move your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
Okay, and then while we're waiting for folks to dial in, so we have just about 10 minutes left, and I know we haven't gotten through everything yet, but Kate or Denise, do you have any thoughts in terms of just wrapping up here, or do you just want to keep pushing for the last 10 minutes?
Oh, I think we should try to get through. I mean, I think the more difficult comments were up front. It's where we had a lot of discussion around real-world testing, and, you know, maybe the rest of this might go a little faster, and then I guess what we're going to need people to do is to read through the rest of the changes. Because I know, Kate, you need to get this out to the full committee, right, today?
Yes, we do.
So just looking quickly, I'm good with 22 through 25. I don't know if others have any thoughts on those. And now I'm looking at 26.
Let me just pause here. Operator, do we have any comments in the queue?
There are none in the queue.
Okay, thanks. All right, so I'll let us get back to this, and it sounds like we'll try to push through as much as we can.
Can you enlarge that? Oh, thank you.
Yeah, those all look good to me as well.
Yeah, I don't have any.
And the electronic prescribing, I think we took that verbatim pretty much.
Yes, unless John thought something that I had wrong in what we had proposed, I think this is fine.
We were trying to
make it largely match up to the current standard, current certification requirement, leaving as optional the things that fell outside that, yeah.
On the quality piece, number 27, I didn't put a comment in. We didn't really put any elaboration for what
I think
the,
that was almost like a technical correction Sasha offered because they were not correct in the alignment of the QRDA to the domains where they apply.
Yeah, but it wouldn't really work for importing.
Okay.
Pardon?
Right.
All right, so do we want to specify that we think what they proposed is not technically correct and this would correct the...
Yeah.
Okay, there you go. So then it should be apparent.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
29 seems fine.
Yeah.
30 seems fine.
Yeah. Well, we have one more.
Two more. 31,
Yeah, that was with respect to their...
Yep, 31.9.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of... I gave just further elaboration on this because it'll help the rest of the committee understand what we were doing there.
Yep, and 32 was fine, kind of a principle going
yep.
forward.
Yeah, and
I think
they
we're good.
Actually take it and apply it and see what else they can remove before they publish the final rule.
Sounds good.
Did we miss anything? Thank you, Kate. You did a great job pulling things in.
Yeah, I was just going to say, did I miss any?
No,
I'm not remembering any offhand.
Pretty thorough there. It's a good set.
Great job, task force.
Go team.
Woo-hoo. Yeah.
All right, so obviously, once you accept all these changes, you'll need to read through to make sure there's no typos. You know how it is with tracking changes and then accepting them. Sometimes there's
mm-hmm.
unintended consequences. And some renumbering, because we did add that
right.
one new recommendation. So that puts us at, 34? How many total did we have? 33 plus one? No, 33 we'll have. 33 recommendations.
And you'll have 45 minutes to present.
Plus, we have to save time out of the 45 minutes for questions and answers.
Correct. So I think it's, Lauren, correct me if I'm wrong, is it more like 20 minutes?
Yeah, I'd say like between 20 and 25 minutes.
All right.
Well, we could, adjust if, some of the other task forces may not have as many recommendations, so if we need to adjust real time, we can do that, but we'll try to split that 45 minutes up in half.
So, Raj, you probably want to, we can both look through this and see how we want to split it up, if we want to split it up how we led the meetings, or I'm open to whatever you suggest, and we can talk a few minutes about that when we debrief.
Yep, that sounds good.
So, task force, is there anything else Raj and I need to make sure gets covered, and Kate, or are you all comfortable with this going forth to the whole committee now?
Yeah. It's...
All right.
I'm ready for it to go.
Yep.
Okay. All right. I think we might get the 5 gold stars. We got our job done. I don't know about the other task forces, because Sasha and I are on another one, and I don't know where they're at.
Well, they still have lots of hours of meetings left, too.
Yes, they do.
Yes, it's a mad dash to the finish line here. Okay. Well, it looks like we're in a good place, at least for getting our first set of draft recommendations to the full committee next week. Kate, I'll follow up with you offline just in getting everything prepped and ready to go.
Okay.
Otherwise, Kate, are you going to be in person?
I will not.
Okay. You'll be on the phone, I take it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yes.
Good. Alrighty. Okay, so I think with that, we can adjourn today. Otherwise, if there's anything
All
else...
Right.
We'll follow up over email.
All right. We'll see everybody in Washington. I don't know if, John, you're going to pay a visit and show up as part of the public.
I would. That's on which day? That's on the 19th?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I would actually like to. I'll see if I can arrange that.
And if not, certainly dial in.
Yeah. No, I would like to try to make it in person. It's
so
good to do that at times. So
hear what the broader committee has to say about the work we did.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. I'll see
about
right.
Otherwise, I'll see the rest of the team there next week.
All righty. Thank you.
Thanks, all.
All right.
Bye-bye.
All right, Raj, we'll dial in real quick and talk to folks about any debrief.
Yep. Sounds good.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Thanks, everybody.
Bye-bye.